Right, are we all ready?
Yes.
Graham, have you recorded some silence?
I've recorded some silence, Andrew.
Effie, have you turned your phone off?
No, I'm doing it now.
Okay. Ben, have you helped Effie put his microphone pop shield on?
I have helped Effie put his microphone shield on.
In that case, we're more or less ready to start podcast series 5, episode 4 of the Tux Radar podcast. I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Efrain Hernandez.
I'm Ben Everard.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And in this issue, we've got a hatful of news. We've got several discoveries. My discoveries are particularly traumatic. We have rants and raves on an ad hoc basis. Do we have any rants or raves at the moment?
No, but we've got a report. We've got to do the reporting on our challenge.
Yes.
And come up with a new challenge.
I've come up with a new challenge. No Speak Your Brains. There's a challenge report.
Now that we know what SYB stands for.
Yeah, see, if I was going to... I'd have used caps, really.
Yeah.
Anyway. And there's an open ballot. What awesome. A feat. Let the feast begin.
Yes.
Wow.
Let's send up the white smoke, because the podcast team is in the house. Bless you.
Are the white smoke signs going to be in English or in Spanish? Because there's got to be a language, isn't
there?
It'll
be in Latin.
It'll be Latin. Yeah.
Oh, and the proles will just get handed down translations.
Other religions are available.
So, the news. The non-religious news. So, first thing, OpenSUSE 12.3 has launched. Latest version of OpenSUSE. I downloaded it yesterday and haven't used it yet.
It was launched yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm keen to try it because I haven't tried it for years. I've installed it a couple of times. It used to be one of the distros I ran for, like, I don't know, 18 months or something here at Linux Format, and I really got to like it. And in the end, Yast got the better of me, and when I was facing an almighty reinstallation, I think probably went to Ubuntu or Kubuntu then. Yeah. But it's a good distribution.
It was the first distro I used, and I got, well, then it was SUSE, and then I actually had a boxed version for a while.
Ooh. Oh, I remember those, yeah.
With a manual, with a really thick manual.
I had, it came with, five manuals.
Wasn't it lovely when things came like that?
Yeah. It came on, I think, 7 CDs and a DVD.
Oh, you see, print isn't dead, it's lovely. Did you ever use the manuals?
Yeah, I only threw them out last year when I was moving down here. And I was like, it's been too long. I haven't, yeah.
Oh, distributions should come with big printed manuals. You know, with those ring binders that you can snap open and put in your own notes. That's how... Oh, no, I'm going way off-piste.
How about we publish a magazine? To, help people learn
how those old-school kids.
SUSE and Yast and stuff like that.
Great idea.
Oh, we're not doing a Yast tutorial, are we?
Do one. congrats.
Yeah, so OpenSUSE's...
Happy birthday.
...been launched. Well done, OpenSUSE team. But we don't know anything about it because we haven't got around to installing it yet.
I've installed
it. Oh, you've installed it? How is it?
It's green.
It's green? Does it still say, have a lot of fun?
It does, yeah.
I always like that.
Yeah, it's cool.
The reason why we're 4 days late, even though our natural equilibrium seems to be a Thursday, is that we've just been so busy. It's been a mental few weeks. We've done a Raspberry Pi bookazine, and we've done the normal issue, and we've been fighting illness and been away on holiday. it has been, we seem to say this all the time, but it's just been the busiest few weeks ever. But then it's just never ending.
It's just normality.
You don't have to worry about that, listeners. But we're late.
That is all right. And hopefully from now on, we're going to be a little bit more relaxed.
We've got 3 days less for the next issue.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
And Gary's leaving.
Yeah.
Gary's leaving.
So, always a challenge.
Is that because the deadline's come forward by 1 day and then there's the bank holiday as well?
Yeah.
So, any other thoughts other than that OpenSUSE's green?
That's pretty much it, to be honest. The last time I do genuinely hate Yast. The last time I used it, I ran into several logical problems, like open Yast, and then I know that Yast does software installation, and then it says you can search within Yast. So I looked in, so I just typed in whatever it was that I wanted, XFCE or something. And no results found, like XFCE hyphen desktop. Realized that I was looking in the wrong search box and I had to go to something else. I clicked on, I think it was add-ons or something, and that wasn't the right thing. And then it was.
Isn't it called add and remove software?
It's called add and remove software, yeah.
Yeah.
But there are two or three different menu entries that adding software could possibly be. Like one's package management, I think. One's add and remove software, and one's third party software. And my problem with SUSE is just basically the problem with Yast. It does too many things.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been sort of half and half, because on the one hand, it is really nice to have a consistent interface, or I want to do something with the system, I go there. Whereas in a lot of other distros, you're sort of searching for one random piece of software that does one random task.
If I was tasked with putting Linux in an office environment, I'd look seriously at SUSE, open SUSE.
Well, the other one is Mageia, and all the other ones around there, Rosa and PC Linux.
So you'd still go with KDE?
Well, no, but it's just that they have a similar piece of software. I've always been really surprised that Canonical haven't created one for Ubuntu, because it seems like such an obvious thing for a new user.
But yeah, they seem to be forking everything else. They may as well go their own way.
But why would you want to adjust anything in Ubuntu? Because it's perfect as it is
on 300 million PCs. Oh, not yet. Next year.
Next year.
I just know we're going to get more "you hate Ubuntu" messages now. Having said
why
that,
why are you so biased?
Yeah.
Well, it'll make a change from the "you love Ubuntu" messages that we also get. Moving on from OpenSUSE to their one-time rivals Red Hat, who have taken ownership of the Java 6 community. Basically, Oracle have said, "This is your last patch, ta-ta, we're off to Oracle 7." And Red Hat have gone, actually, you know, a lot of people still need Java 6. So they've taken ownership of the community. They're going to
Is it effectively a fork?
No, not really. It's just looking after a previous version.
Right, okay.
It'll just be keeping on top of the security updates and all that sort of thing.
Right, it's not that people aren't trusting the direction that Oracle's going to take Java.
This isn't a LibreOffice, Apache OpenOffice.
MariaDB. I genuinely don't know.
Maintaining an old fork rather than letting it die in the dust. Which, again, we've said this a few times when similar things happen. It shows the advantage of open source software. If that was commercial and Oracle said, goodbye, we're moving on to 7, you'd either have to roll over to 7, which for some organizations would be a massive task.
Yeah.
This time, you know, someone just stepped in and said, "No, we'll keep you up to date with security, etc."
Excellent.
So yeah.
Nice work, Red Hat.
Red Hat.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, really Red good Hat.
Of you. Keep our studio software running for another 10 years.
Yeah, it almost makes up for System D. From moving on from Linux onto BSD for a moment, Secure Boot, the scourge of the PC. Is making its way into FreeBSD. They've issued a grant to a chap to implement a secure boot solution.
Right. So why is that going to be any different? Is it going to be just signing? Why is that going to be any different to a Linux solution?
It's not. I was searching around for the exact solution they're going, and I can't find that much information about it, to be honest. But obviously the alternative would just be to continue using the legacy BIOS, which in principle is supported by UEFI secure boot motherboards, but they're not. They're going for a pure UEFI solution. So I assume it will be along the lines of self-signing and having their keys, getting users to put their keys into the firmware. But I
have to wait and see.
Yeah, have to wait and see what that is.
I'm surprised because it's a hard enough debate with Linux.
Yeah,
it's an even harder debate when it comes to FreeBSD, whether they could tolerate, you know, keys being embedded within some firmware somewhere.
Yeah, but
yeah, when needs must.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you have to run on computers, and if that's the way computers work.
Yeah, although it could pressure some manufacturers into, you know, not going down the secure boot route.
I doubt there's too many manufacturers worried about FreeBSD.
I know.
to be honest, much as I like FreeBSD, back to Linux. Ubuntu has launched Mir.
Maybe it's Mir, like the space station.
Yeah, it comes from the Russian word, which I believe means peace.
Ciao.
That's Italian.
Bless you. No, that's Argentinian. It's actually Falklandish.
The whole interweb, it seems, is lit up with complaints about why Ubuntu has done this.
Oh, God, no.
I can see where this is going. Has Ubuntu lost it?
This is not a democracy. We're innovating. We must be free to innovate.
I genuinely don't know what it is. This is the first I've seen of it.
I mean, basically, it's a replacement for X. So
They were going to go with Wayland.
They were going to go with Wayland, and they said, no, we're not going to go for Wayland because of these reasons.
Oh.
And then some Wayland developers have gone, no, Wayland supports all that. And they've gone, okay, we're going to go with Mir anyway for these reasons I have here in my pocket.
I remember reading
I'll tell
it
you
the
about them
now.
Later.
Why?
I think it's too early to see what exactly... And to be honest, I don't really understand the graphic stack. It confuses me.
I genuinely love Ubuntu. I really do. It's a great distribution for all the reasons I've said before, but this is like the third or fourth big story where they're going against the standards, where I strongly believe we should all be working towards the same set of standards and interoperability and making sure we're all working towards the same aim. And fair enough, if they want to turn Ubuntu into a non-Linux distribution effectively, which looks like what they're doing, then great. But unfortunately, I think for me, that means that I'm just going to lose interest in it.
I mean, you say they're going against the standards. They're still going to support GTK and Qt, so...
They have to for themselves, because they're not going to, unless they develop their own toolkit.
So from an application writer's point of view, you write for Linux.
But how much stronger would Wayland be, which... is a really exciting innovation if one of the biggest distributions is behind it and making patches to it.
Well, they never made patches.
I am disappointed. Mark.
Wasn't it something to do with QML? Or that was at least one of their stated reasons, that QML would run better, or that QML performance on Wayland isn't good enough.
Then make Wayland run better with QML. You know. Sorry.
No, I mean, their stated reasons were to do with the security of the protocol, which turned out to be complete hokum.
Okay.
And to do with server-side buffers, things, I don't know, little things in microchips that confuse me.
I can't help feeling that the Ubuntu distribution is severing its links with Linux.
Well, you see, I can't help wondering if this is going to be like a Unity versus GNOME 3 thing, because I think that's actually quite good. I think both Unity and GNOME 3 have gone in different ways and experimented with different things. I think that our sort of understanding of
they
what
haven't.
We like to
they
use...
Haven't.
They have.
They've,
yeah.
they, you say they've experimented with different things. So in a world of infinite possibilities, Unity and GNOME look completely different.
They look different.
They barely look different at all. They do look, almost exactly the same
they
thing.
They don't. Like, well, I've got any desktop manager basically
does
the
cancerous tiling
same thing.
Window managers.
No, I think... I like the fact that we have both Unity and GNOME 3 trying
different
things.
If Unity genuinely innovated, if it did
it
something...
It does. It does a lot of things different.
If you show to my grandfather Unity and GNOME 3, he'd be hard-pressed to tell the difference between them. And I'd have to say, they've developed independently, Grandpa.
If you showed your grandpa GNOME 3 and a turned-off screen, he'd be hard-pressed to tell you the difference. At least Unity has some buttons down the side and a dash, and it is genuinely different.
The buttons really constitute the innovation, isn't it?
Very important.
If you just have the blank GNOME 3 screen, you might not know where Firefox is. But with Unity, it's always there.
It's not just the buttons down the side. It's the lenses and the dash.
It's the lenses. It's the Amazon searches.
It's not just Amazon searches.
You can always search your file system.
You can, but you can search it and you can lens it. It's not just searching. Lens. You can lens it. You can focus in
lenses
on a particular thing that you wanted to see.
Do lenses for GNOME 3. It'd be cool. Do web apps for GNOME 3. It'd be great.
Then
everybody
do them.
Gets the benefit. No, I'm a KDE user, which is much, much better. I leave you lot to your squabbling with your innovation.
That's rants and raves done. That's it.
Yeah, let's just copy and paste that section.
I'm slightly scared to say it, but there's more Ubuntu news. to provide a completely different user experience, there's now a GNOME 3, an official GNOME 3 version of Ubuntu. For those people who want something similar to Unity, but different enough to provide...
to confuse elderly relatives.
I'm not saying anything. Great, choice is good.
Choice is good. Yes, because you're afraid of breakfast cereal, Graham.
Yeah. yeah, any other comments?
So there's official. Who's given the official blessing?
Well, Canonical have. I don't know whether Mark Shuttleworth himself has a big stamp that goes bang on the mastered DVD. I don't know, but it comes from Ubuntu.
He appears on the top floor of the Blue Fin building in Southwark. All dressed in white. Waves to the crowd.
Ciao.
Mumbles something.
They've got a series of chimneys and the one with a big G on it just let out white smoke.
Purple smoke.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not been used for a while. That's great. That's great. If you love Ubuntu like I do and you like GNOME, then you've finally got somewhere to go.
possibly less controversial Ubuntu news. They've also released an official version that's sort of set up for Chinese users. Great, you know, it's a huge number of people.
Which desktop does it use?
I actually don't know.
It begins with a K, so it's probably KDE, because that's how their tiny literal minds work.
Possibly.
Yeah, you're right. probably Kenji support in KD is much better.
Anyway, yeah. There is yet more Ubuntu news.
Share the Ubuntu love.
Dell's Project Sputnik. This is the Ubuntu
laptop.
Which
is brilliant.
Yeah?
This was brilliant. I saw this last year running, and it's a fantastic... Sorry, Ben.
So I'll finish the piece of news before...
Sorry.
It's been available, like you say, for a year, and it's now available for us Limeys. For a long time it was available only in America, and it's popped up on the UK's Dell site for £899, depending on whether that's cheap or expensive, depends on what your last laptop was, really.
It's a very high-powered laptop. Well, it's like an ultrabook, they call them, don't they? What the Ubuntu team and the Dell team have done is excellent in terms of customizing it to get maximum kind of performance out of it. I think it runs like 1204 at LTS.
Yeah, it does.
It's great.
Yeah, I mean, I was having a look on the Dell shop today, and there's just sort of like the features of it, and it said does not include Office software.
Oh, dear.
That's stupid.
Like,
that's even wrong.
I didn't notice the capitalization. It wasn't MS Office or wasn't... It just said no Office software.
Right.
And it's like, are you trying to not sell these now you've created them? You fools.
I know, and who's going to spend like almost £1,000 on a laptop and then be worried about whether it includes the Office software or not?
Yeah.
LibreOffice.
Abbey Word.
K Word.
No, Caligra. Not K Word. the Pistons launch. This is the new... This is not actually the Steam Box, because the Steam Box is going to run Linux. This is kind of like a Windows version of the Steam Box that's come out first, released by the company that's rumoured to be making the actual Steam Box. So basically, it's a small PC to run as a console.
This is the company that made these small cases before, didn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah.
And is the specification similar? Are they saying anything like that?
Well, Steambox haven't... Well, Valve haven't said what the final specs for the Steambox will be. I would imagine it's roughly similar.
Right. Do you know anything about prices?
It's $1,000.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money for a console. I couldn't wouldn't spend that.
Yeah. What? Plus another $750 if you want to upgrade to 500 gig hard drive.
What?
Yeah, it's not cheap, but it is upgradable.
Is that about 700 quid?
Yeah,
more or less.
That's an enormous amount of money.
Yeah.
That's just silly. You might as well just buy a PlayStation 4, whatever the latest version is.
Well, maybe.
Well, I think what we're seeing here is more how much the previous consoles were subsidised.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to be a struggle for Valve then, isn't it?
Well, like I say, this isn't the official Valve box. But,
so the official Valve box may well be subsidised.
It may be subsidised and it won't come, almost certainly won't come with Windows. That'll knock a chunk off the cost as well.
A lost leader, like we mentioned, two or three podcasts ago. You sell something for super duper cheap, but then the services that support it, you sell for super duper expensive.
Like printers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Sega Mega Drive was about 120 quid, but I think Michael Jackson's Moonwalker, which is the first game I got for it, was 40 quid.
40 quid?
40 quid?
40 quid.
In 19... Whatever.
80 something.
Them were days.
Interesting to see what it's like.
Yeah. More gaming news. The Humble Indie Bundle is still going on. You can go and get one. This one's for Android, but also all the games did run on Linux, and they added some more games, and I haven't checked whether the new games added on Linux ran on Linux. But the ones that were there, good fun to play. Pay whatever you like.
You were saying yesterday that even if you bought the previous bundle, you got extra games.
Well, if you bought the bundle before, because I'd bought the bundle and I was like, oh, I was quite happy. Then I think it was five games, something like that.
Yeah.
And then, and just got an email saying you've got three more games.
They should give the opportunity to pay a bit more money if you wanted to.
I think you can on Humble Bundles anyway.
Right.
There's a thing that you
I suppose with no minimum price, there's nothing stopping you.
Yeah.
But if you're really enjoying it, you can go back and give them extra cash.
Yeah.
That's cool. I wonder how many people do that.
Loads of Linux users.
Yeah.
Very few Windows users.
We're better people.
Yeah.
We care more about morally those kids in the hospitals.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now on the final section of news, I couldn't find a way of segueing into the continuous flow. It's been two hacking or cracking, if you'd rather, contests recently. The first one was Pwn to Own, or Own to Own, however you wish to pronounce that, which had record payouts. That's where they take a range of different web browsers on various operating systems and you can go up and you try and hack them. And if you manage to get privileges on the operating system, they give you massive stashes of money. It was almost $500,000 paid out this time to people who managed to crack into almost everything, really. But it was almost, in fact, I think it was actually all the successful attempts were on Windows versions, through mostly Firefox and Chrome. No one attempted their Safari challenge, but I think all the other ones fell.
Right.
This was shortly followed up by Google's Pwnium competition. And this is usually about the web browser, but this time they did it on Chrome OS just to sort of distinguish it a bit. And no one managed it. They put up 3,142,000 because Google likes Pi, dollars. And no one got any.
So that's really good. I mean, it's really good for Chrome OS and probably shows some of the logic behind making an OS that restrictive.
Yeah. Mm. So, given how quickly the other one's falling, that's a real win for Google there.
Yeah.
You can really stand up. The worst sermon...
Linux, a real win for Linux.
For Linux, yeah. At the worst sermon, they said they may pay out for partial exploits. They're still investigating them. But they said there was no...
Did you need the official Google hardware to run Chrome OS? Because I suppose it's going to limit the number of people who could do it.
There were unofficial versions. I can't remember.
I suppose you could try it on a virtual machine and then...
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah, there was a version you could download. I don't know if it's been kept up to date.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the end of the news.
Fantastic. Much, much better than last time. Thanks, Ben.
Good work, Ben. Was last time when Ben wasn't here?
Yeah.
Oh, that was awful.
That was bad.
That was bad.
Still, no arguments in that one. It's Discovery of the Week time.
Yes,
which is like 2.5 weeks. Who wants to go first?
Can I?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course.
I've got so many discoveries. I'm thinking of like hiving some of them off and pretending that one of them's a rant and a rave a bit later on.
I'm using it next time because we're always so...
Could do. Just an end to boom and bust. My first discovery is awesome. It comes courtesy of David Lammy, who is the MP for Tottenham and has been an MP since he was 27 years old.
Lots of world experience then.
Exactly.
Very dedicated.
Real world professional.
Yeah.
You know, made his mark on society and then thought, I know, how can I give something back? Yeah.
I know what I'll do. I'll become a politician.
Brilliant. Very briefly under the fag end of the Blair years, he was Minister for Education.
Oh, good. I suppose he was in education until he was 27, so he probably knew a lot about that.
Well, if you want to know more about David Lammy, Google David Lammy Mastermind. See how he got on. Yes, but no, that comedic episode is not what I'm talking about now. David Lammy, blah, 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 blah. Yes, that's right. A BBC journalist in Rome reporting on the recent religiosity there tweeted on Twitter, because that's what the BBC does now. The tweet read, "Will smoke be black or white?" Showing a gap in his knowledge of European history, which is surprising for such a, you know, erudite, well-rounded chap. David Lammy responded also on Twitter, "This tweet from the BBC is crass and unnecessary. Do we really need silly innuendo about the race of the next pope?"
Wow.
Excellent.
Wow.
Quite by coincidence, the smoke was white. The pope is also white.
Incredible.
Maybe he was on something, maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, education minister. What was that all about? frightening news. More awesome discovery. Amber Ailes.
Oh, yeah.
And Effie, you'll concur with this, right?
Did you all enjoy them? With this.
They were great.
They were fantastic.
A fine case of ales from Amber Ailes, which is amberales.co.uk, arrived in the office. Well, unfortunately, while Graham was out, while he was...
What a shame.
While he was quaffing champagne on the slopes of Clusters. So we all had some of that and it was delicious. There's one called Jasmine IPA, which has some of the hops.
Has Gary written this?
It's dictated to me. some of the hops taken out and replaced with jasmine flowers. For a less bitter, more sort of floral, heady, you know, light mixture.
So when you say taken out and replaced with, they actually put them in?
Oh, I don't know.
They didn't just switch them prior to...
That would make more sense. The founder, Pete, has a background in chemical engineering, so he probably would have done it the way you describe, but not the silly Shangri-La way. it's in Derbyshire. Mm. Halfway between Derby and Chesterfield, near the hamlets of Alfreton. And I had a bottle of South Pacific IPA, which was delicious. And you had some Imperial IPA, didn't you?
And the Revolution.
6.5% alcoholic strength.
Lovely stuff.
So tasty.
Lovely stuff. Really lively. I think Gary was right in saying that when you pour it out of the bottle, it's just basically... It's
fizzing with life and flavour.
Fantastic stuff.
You can actually, for beer, it actually tastes like it's really good for you as well.
I think you mentioned it as well, and I really agree with you. The labels, they look almost like they've been just handmade. And they've just been painted something like that. Absolutely fantastic designs as well.
They're really awesome branding, yeah.
Lovely stuff.
The brewery tap, the pub sign for that is in American Unseal, which is one of those notorious fonts.
Oh, yeah, it's true, yeah. True.
But that's a rare misstep from Amber Ales, because the beer itself is okay. Excellent. And they've got one named after Barnes Wallace.
Yeah.
What would Barnes Wallace do? he'd invent a bouncing bomb and flood the German war machine.
Maybe they're...
With minimal loss of civilian life.
They, it was in the Peak District, on some of the lakes in the Peak District, that they did some of the practice runs, wasn't it? So maybe they're near the brewery.
Yeah. Well, I think Barnes Wallis is from Ripley, where the brewery is.
Ah.
Maybe that's how they deliver their casks.
Oh, yes.
Those are but two of my discoveries. I may ration two others for a made up ad hoc section in about 15 minutes.
Okay, cool.
That was one of my discoveries, but you already.
What, the beer?
Yeah.
I didn't discover any amber ale beer.
But also discover how you can fix domestic conflicts through technology.
We could do with a bit of that.
Yeah, all right.
This isn't hitting them with a computer, is
it? With a power cable. No, I just had a problem with one of my daughters that she kept sucking her thumb. She's already 8, and we could not find any way to sort of get rid of the
bad habit. Thumb off.
that was an option, and I talked to the police, and they strongly advised me against it. So
no, just make it easier for her to suck.
For a short while. Anyway,
in a jar of vinegar.
For some reason, she was introduced. Let me speak. For some reason, she was introduced to Minecraft by a friend, so I used that as a bargaining tool. If you want me to install Minecraft on the tablet, all you got to do is stop sucking your thumb forever. And hey, I'll give you a week to do that.
I noticed then you used a little bit of your fatherly tones. If you want to install Minecraft on your tablet, then you better stop sucking your thumb.
Girlfriend. Anyway, yeah. So I discovered that I could actually... resolve
house
conflicts through some kind of
Minecraft technology. Is a wonderfully creative thing as well. It's not like, I don't know, Angry Birds.
Yeah, and I was actually really happy after that, because I haven't played with Minecraft, and I started playing with Minecraft, and I thought actually makes a lot of sense to this thing. But yeah, that was a discovery.
I've never actually played Minecraft. What is it?
You're building an environment with blocks, but it's not just that. It's just that they get really immersed into the environment.
Okay,
and then you get attacked by zombies, and you can I don't know.
There are two ways of playing it.
It's weird.
You can play it online as like a big open world sandbox where you really can just create things. People have created stuff out of. It uses like voxel graphics, so big pixels, chunky graphics. It looks kind of old school, but you can build great big 3D models out of basically these pixel blocks. So people have created like. The Vatican City or the Starship Enterprise, and people can do it at the same time. There's that side to it. There's also a bit of a survival mode to it as well if you play it on your own. But it's the creative side that really captures people's imagination.
So can you go and visit these stuff people have created?
Other people can.
For instance, that Russian test, they're building their own house, and then they sort of putting furniture inside and stuff like that, and then they go for a walk, and then I don't know, stuff like that. And they come back to the house.
What if someone's like moved in?
I think they have come back, and then they find a zombie inside the house.
A zombie.
It's not just a game, it's an adventure.
Okay.
That's cool.
Mike Saunders wrote a feature for us about spending a week in Minecraft, he titled it, and it read like the diaries of Colonel Kurtz, I know, halfway up the Mekong River. Deep in black country, you know, it sounded like he got really, really, really immersed into it and just spent hours and hours of his life hiding from zombies, crying.
No one's actually seen Mike since then. It's a little like Tron, isn't it?
It's on his bike. Anyway, yeah, that was my discovery.
Okay, I've been discovering a couple of things. The biggest one is I've got a tablet.
Hey.
It's a very nice tablet, by the way.
Well, the first tablet I thought was like this sort of no-name 10-inch Android tablet, but it had issues with the charge. It had non-standard charge. It didn't use micro USB, which is really annoying.
What, it was an iPad?
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't an iPad. Yeah, and that, when you plugged in the charger, the screen just went crazy. So, that's really annoying.
It was an iPad.
So I took that back and I thought, I'll get a Nexus 7 instead. So I got a Nexus 7. Thought I'd get the flagship Google device. Everyone else seems to have one, see. And actually, I've been really, really pleased with it. It's I still can't work out what you use it for other than playing games, to be honest.
Updating the news every 10 minutes.
Ah, okay.
Does it have an F5 button?
No. Doesn't have any buttons.
Reading.
Oh, it has a power button and a volume button.
Reading books?
Could read books, but I've also got books for that.
That's good. Listening to music.
They are really good for reading books. Yeah,
yeah, they're really good.
Okay.
Listen to music?
I did that on my phone.
Was it last time? Maybe you weren't here, but I think one of my discovery was that I'm fed up of tablets. I find them completely unproductive.
Like, see, I find them great for playing games.
Yeah.
That's... And yeah, they're all right for web browsing and that sort of stuff, but...
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed the game experience on it.
They're not... I think... Yeah, they're quite... I suppose they're quite good, but I always want a real controller.
I like the particularly the racing games where you can hold it and steer, and that's quite cool. And I like the fact that every game can have its own controller. You just... You know, you're not sort of locked into one way of doing things, which doesn't necessarily make sense for some games. They can just create their own control on the screen.
I'm just too old school.
You're just too old.
Just too old.
When you play games on your tablet, do you carry that massive joystick thing around? Joystick that's like a yard wide. Chunky buttons.
Yeah. Evan just gaffer tapes it to the front of your arcade cabinet. So yeah, that, I've been discovering games on the Nexus 7. Humble Bundle, actually great games on the for Android. And the second one is I was at the Raspberry Pi Jamboree last weekend, and I got a chance to talk to some of their teachers and that about how they're actually using the Raspberry Pi. Because one of the things I always think about is, I mean, it's a great piece of education, and he's like, oh, you know, you can use it to learn to program. You're like, well, you can, but actually, you can use a computer for it, and it's a lot better, really. It's a lot faster. It's a lot more powerful. Mm-hmm. And then you say, oh, you can use it for these robotics projects. Now, well, you can, but really, I'd use an Arduino for that. You know, it's more, you've got more controllers. It's basically the same price. You know, you've got better input and outputs, better code examples online. And I've always had this sort of thing, what is the big sort of thing that makes the advantage? And sort of, I asked this to a couple of the teachers, and there's a sort of couple of things that sort of ran through. One is the fact that they're not locked down in any way. I mean, the default user has pseudo access and all this. And I think that, and obviously you could set up any computer like that, but I think a strong part is the price. They're not seen as some precious thing that has to be looked after. You know, obviously they should be looked after, but they're the same price as a textbook. They're handed out, do whatever you like with them.
I think that's what makes the difference.
Well, and the second thing that's sort of particularly compared to the Arduino is that it's a continuous learning environment, in that you start off with a graphical environment that's relatively familiar to most kids, then move on to Scratch maybe or Python, which is still, you know, it's an incremental step. And then to then put that into a robotics environment is another incremental step. Whereas if you've got something like the Arduino, you've got to suddenly learn C and a weird IDE and then plug wires in. It's a big jump to go straight into it.
Yeah.
So those are the two sort of key things that were coming through as to why they're really good for education, which sort of helped cement it in my mind, because I was a bit confused about that.
Excellent.
And I also discovered John Roberts has a doppelganger in Rob Bishop of the Raspberry Pi Foundation. They are almost scarily identical. Same haircut, same boyish enthusiasm.
Same sense of optimism about the world.
He didn't actually say he wanted to attack Devon, but I think he did.
You don't normally reveal that on your first date, do you?
Should point out, I didn't have a date with Rob Bishop.
Cut this bit out, Graham. Cut out Ben's denial.
Just because it was a candle and a bottle of wine doesn't make it a date. It's two people interested in technology having a chat.
Yeah. With John, with someone that you work with, it would have been awkward, but now you found like better John.
Okay, thanks. I've got awesome. A couple of discoveries.
Yeah, great.
I'm reading a book called The Joy of X.
All right.
Now, as in EX?
Or as in just the letter X. Yeah. It's about popularising maths. Now, I did maths A-level at school, and pretty much maths A-level finished me off with any interest I had in maths. And The Joy of X, it's by Steve Srogatz. It's a compilation, really, of a series of articles he did for the New York Times. So they're kind of just like bite-sized, popularised pieces of mathematics, and I'm really enjoying it because it's like answering. It's made it interesting. It's made because it's always visual. It's not at all geeky. It's not at all difficult to follow. And I was going to give one of the examples from the book, which I just thought was brilliant because it involves using infinity to prove a solution, and which is something that I never in those years at A level maths I never even thought of, and it's. To prove the area of a circle. The area of a circle is pi r squared, which is something that we all learn at school, but no one ever tells you how to prove it or what it actually means. And the proof in the book takes, if you imagine a circle, split it up into segments like a piece of cake, and then put them, so one segment with the bottom at the bottom, one segment at the bottom, the top. So it kind of creates a bumpy, I don't know if you can visualize this, but kind of lay the segments out horizontally. Right. Mm. And then if you can work out what the circumference of the bottom edge is, because it's half the total circumference of the circle. So the circumference of the circle, I think, is pi times diameter. So it's pi times the radius, because it's half of the diameter. And then you know the radius, which is actually the right side axis. So that's R. Now, imagine you do that with four segments, quarters of the circle. Now, in your head, do that with eight. You'll see that the slant gets slightly less and the bumpiness of the curve gets slightly less. Now, imagine it with 16. Now, imagine it with 32 and 64. You should be able to imagine that it's getting more and more like a rectangle. And then if you imagine an infinite number of slices, you have got a rectangle, so the area of a circle is pi r times r, pi r squared. That's it. And if you, I think in the book, he's got fantastic illustrations, and that for me was real, right, wow, that's amazing moment. And so I highly recommend the book. Another one is actually from Mike's Hot Picks that we just sent to the printers yesterday, and it's a command line program called NetHog. And it's like top, but for all the processes running on your system that have dealings with the Ethernet connection, you run it and it just bubbles up the processes that are doing things on the network. So if you're running Spotify, you can see it uploads, downloads, and all that kind of stuff. I left it running for a couple of days without doing anything on Dropbox, for example. It moved a couple of megabytes probably and just status updates and things like that. But it's a really useful way of seeing what services are running on your system and what's using up the bandwidth.
You see, stuff like that, I mean, it's quite useful on the desktop, but the one I'd really want it on my phone or my tablet.
Mm, yes, yeah. Yes.
So you can see where your money's going.
Well, maybe you can get NetHog for Android,
maybe,
you know.
Yeah, because especially with those random apps, you have no idea what's going on, and you just see a little bandwidth flashing away, and what's actually using it?
Yeah. So they're my discoveries.
So halfway reminder, still to come, we have a special section which takes the place of rants and raves, but isn't actually. It's kind of more of a rant, and the report on our challenges, and we have open ballots. Still to come in Tux Radar Podcast Series 5, Episode 4. Which brings me on to the special section, which is just basically more of my discoveries that we didn't have time for.
We're only on 45 minutes.
Oh, gosh. Should we just not bother then?
No, okay.
If you could find some Barb's Adagio for strings for this section.
You said that to me before, and I looked and couldn't find a CC version of it.
Okay, how about the sad music on Steve Wright's Sunday Love Songs? Which is the British version of Barb's Adagio for strings. I'm just going to say this out loud, and you'll all know how it ends.
I decided to upgrade my distro without backing everything up first.
Oh yes, you're right now. I like, can see it with the defo
staggering out of the jungle. No. Don't do it, people. It's not worth it. So Mint 12 was working fine. Clem's advice is on Mint. If you're happy with your system, don't bother upgrading it. He's not a that's the pragmatic ethos of Linux Mint, and that's partly why we love it so much.
Yeah.
But no, like a fool, I disregarded his words and tried to install Ubuntu over it. The Ubuntu installation hung. Mint, the MBR somehow got violated, and I couldn't boot into Mint anymore, and I couldn't boot into Ubuntu anymore. But the partitions were still there because I kept a separate home partition, and then I found Mint 13 Debian edition, which I use at work, so I put that on there. Partitioning schema, you know, use separate home partition. Yep. And then it came up with a dialogue thing that I hadn't seen before. It was about overwriting some system files or whatever, and I thought that the right thing to do was to click to format the home partition, which obviously wasn't the right thing to do. So now all of my data has gone because I foolishly did not back up. and Mint 12 now won't boot because it's looking for a home partition that isn't there, and Mint 13. Somehow, I don't know why, maybe it's because of the Debian version, and Debian is good on freedom. It doesn't have the drivers to work my touchpad, so it just boots into a screen, that initial Mint screen, and I can't move anything around. So it's just all wrong. It's all wrong. Don't do it. Don't do it, people.
Top tip, if you knacker your MBR and you can't boot into anything but the partitions are there, is a thing called Supergrub, which basically, I think it's Supergrub 2.
It's a distro, isn't it?
It's not a distro because it doesn't have Linux on it. It's just Grub. So I guess it's a distro of Grub, you could call it, or Grub 2. And you put that on and it just searches everything and goes... Here are the possible systems on your computer. Which one do you want to boot?
Yeah.
And you go, that's great. One. It's got me out of a couple of sticky situations.
Have you test disk at times like that to find partitions, which it's usually really good at, even if you've deleted the partition table?
Okay.
But, maybe it would have been too late, probably.
Yeah, once you've formatted it.
I've formatted data.
If there's anything key on there, we could try and get it off.
Oh, I've done that before. I've talked about it with my 2-terabyte drive. I reformatted it by mistake, and there's a billion photos on there, and I used PhotoRec to get them all back, but... Really, I've just got a folder with 60,000 photos and their thumbnails and album art in, all randomly named, randomly dated, no metadata. It's just better to move on with your life.
Yeah, I think so. Which brings us neatly to our challenge report.
Oh.
Yeah.
There are no initials next to this, so we just have to...
Yeah, we can share it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Well, I'm to be honest, I've been away. I did talk a bit last time about Mint Debian, and how I'd been using Mint anyway. So I love it. I still think it's great. But I'm sorry, I haven't got that much more to contribute. I've kind of failed.
I've done some.
Yeah.
Yeah. And had to install Ubuntu 12. 0.04, because that's what you were using, Ben, wasn't it? But luckily, I decided to install it in the same machine where I got Mint, but side by side, I didn't want to replace it. I didn't want to replace Mint, just in case that I made the same mistake as
you, Andrew.
So you resized the partitions without backing
up? I resized the partitions, yeah. I did go through the problem, the process of it. Installation, actually, of Ubuntu is not... It's never a problem. It's quite simple. It's quite easy to resizing the partition. That's what it took time. But other than that, it was very simple, very painless. After installing it, it required to install some updates on the graphical facility. But for some reason, he didn't want to do it. So Ben came and gave us a hand trying to, and we did it manually using the command line. For some reason, this just didn't want to work. He kept throwing errors regarding that I wasn't connected to the internet when I was. Anyway, through the command line, we managed to get all the updates and run perfectly. After that, what really annoys me of the desktop and Ubuntu is the toolbar on the left, which is called the launcher, and I didn't even realize had a name. I just thought it was the toolbar, the Unity's toolbar. So I managed to modify it. And on the appearance facility, you can ask to change the behavior of it, so you can be hidden or appear whenever. But the strange thing is that it only gives you two options: it's left and right. You can put it at the top, or you can put it at the bottom if you want to. And I think that's a design fault on the desktop environment. I think you should be able to put it wherever you want to put it.
I think you're wrong. Ubuntu is perfect.
Well, that's still to be debated. I think still Ubuntu works really well. It works. The search engine. If you got a file, for instance, or an application, and you type the name of it, like GIMP, for instance, it finds it perfectly. And I was thinking, what if I type something I know that I haven't got in it? What would it happen? Such an application, and I typed Skype, and I couldn't find it. And I thought that's also a design fault, because surely it could give you an option or an alternative, such as you haven't got Skype's an application.
If you have got some of the third-party repositories enabled, I think you can install stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize. I was just basically working it fresh out of the box. But I think the desktop environment is still okay. Unity is not. It's not great. It looks awful. I think it's still the actual graphical look of it. It's just pretty rubbish. Wrong colors. Wrong icons, too bold, too big, too yellow, and too pinky.
Bango's our sponsorship.
And what it really annoys me as well is that when you have a window open, for instance, a browser window open, the buttons to close it, to minimize it, to expand it, are not logical. They're not actually above where they're supposed to be. They're round the corner, round top of the launcher. And you think, well, that's just rubbish, isn't it? It only works when the window is minimized and it's quite tiny. Then the buttons are actually where they're supposed to be. But when using the full screen mode, it's just, they're never there. That's just pants, I think. I don't know. Well, that's just my opinion. But it runs well, it runs fast, it's quite efficient. It's got multiple tasks that you can perform at once, so I think that it's good. It's just the looks, I think. It's just the way that it looks just looks a little bit crap. I don't know, that's me. But I haven't actually played with it long enough to really make an educated opinion about it. But yeah, I'm on my challenge. I'm doing
good,
it.
Good work.
Who's using Ubuntu?
I shifted from Ubuntu to Mint as part of this
chat. So is this how this is going to work?
I've just installed Mint and it's all grey, all the buttons are little, and it's just so uninspired. The button to close the window are all over the place and not just nicely and neatly in the top corner.
Well,
nice try, Ben.
To be honest, I was being a bit lazy, and I was like, I'll do it in a minute. And then Ubuntu sort of prompted me to take up the challenge by updating and knackering my graphics drivers.
Yeah, cool.
So I was there with the command prompt, and I was like, well, I could fix this, or I could just stop being lazy and install Mint. So I did the latter. I installed Mint. The install was fine, got it up and running. Firefox didn't work. Oh man, that's really annoying. Well, I did an upgrade and it worked. One thing that annoyed me, it's always noticed, is it failed silently. You clicked on it, nothing happened. So I opened up the terminal, it's like Firefox, enter,
Also, many window managers have no knowledge whatsoever of what's happening in the background. So they'll do things like animate the Firefox icon, bouncing around. We're doing something when in fact it failed like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, and even at the command line, when you ran it, bang, nothing. Just, a new command prompt, no error message.
Yeah.
But I installed Chromium, that worked fine, and I did an upgrade, and then it worked. So don't know what the issue was, but it fixed itself. Other than that, the big differences, I don't know. I still maintain that the Ubuntu Software Manager is a really great piece of software, and the Mint one is good. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's just not as good as the Ubuntu.
No, I was going to say that. I think that's one good thing about the Ubuntu installation, because the layout of the window, the Software Manager, or the Software Center, whatever they call it, it's really, in comparison to the actual desktop environment, it's really nicely designed. Yeah. And you've got the highlights at the top with little circles indicating which is the highlight of the day or the highlight of the month, like, I don't know, Steam and so on and so on.
And there's stuff like it's linked into my Humble Bundle, so I can download the stuff I've got from the Humble Bundle through the Software Manager. And they're paid software on the Software Manager, but because I've got the bundle, it knows that. Just gives me them for free and stuff like that. So,
no, that facility is lovely. I think that's really good.
Yeah. Other than that, I meant, obviously, it's still built on the same base, so the internals are there. Yeah. I went for the Mate rather than
Cinnamon.
Mm. And it's like Ubuntu was 3 years ago.
High praise indeed. Because 3 years ago, Ubuntu was really good.
I don't know what to say, really.
Yeah, I think that's enough.
Yeah. I'm still stuck with the blinking command line with Arch. I'm going to give up. It's too hard.
Well, has anyone got any ideas for the next challenge? Because I have got an idea.
Oh, great.
Yeah. The idea is actually most work for me, probably. But I was thinking that for our next podcast, we'd try and do it live. I don't know how technically feasible this might be.
You need to put a big poster up saying no swearing.
Yeah, and maybe try and go back onto Freenode and get the next format channel up and running so that people can join IRC while we do the podcast live. And I haven't tried it before. I don't know what hoops to jump through, but that'll be my challenge over the next couple of weeks, is to try and get the setup ready so that we can do a live podcast next time. And I suppose to the listeners, we need to know what time would be best, preferably in UK office hours, Monday to Friday,
please.
But let us know what time will work best for you, whether it's a lunch hour or whatever it happens to be, and we'll pool the times and try and come up with something. Mm-hmm. And I'll try and get it working so that we can do it. And that's what I thought would be.
So you mean just audio only? No.
Just audio. Yeah. I think so.
So you can still make rude hand gestures.
yeah. We can still sit here naked. It doesn't matter.
That's good. No, good idea.
Okay.
A part of the naked thing.
So that mental image brings us
storming to open ballot. Open ballot. It's time for open ballot. The question, which is the one thing I always forget to copy and paste into my notes, was something to do with computers.
The question.
Oh, that was it. What should, when kids leave school, what should they know how to do? Should they be able to do a kernel stage compile 5-stage Gentoo installation? Should they be able to use Excel, because that's what depressingly most people will be using in their working lives? Should they just be completely ignorant? Should they know how to build their own CPU like Jonathan Roberts? And this question is a very good question, which I neglected to copy and paste. I'm very sorry. Is prompted by an American musician called William, who's given £500,000 to
Prince's Trust.
To Prince's Trust, so they can spend it on iPads.
Yeah.
That's right. That's weird, wasn't it? Ben, you assembled this. What's the background? What's the story?
So I don't know exactly in what order it happened, but this survey went out about about young people and IT, and about, well, specifically IT in the workplace. And it came back that all these 15 to 25 year olds were not applying for jobs that required IT skills, even if it was only basic IT skills. And a lot of them were worried about even filling in an application form online.
Here we go. It says, the Prince's Trust says, 1 in 10 unemployed young people cannot send their CV online.
If they could put it on Facebook, that'd be all right.
Yeah. A quarter say they dread filling in online job applications.
Yeah.
A tenth of NEETs, that's young.
Not employed something or training.
Not education.
Yes, not an employment education or training. Yeah.
They were, a tenth of them said they were embarrassed by their lack of computer skills, and 17% admitted they do not apply for jobs that require basic computer skills.
Yeah.
It's astounding.
Yeah. And this William chap, he's decided to go take some computing courses because he's like, he can do wrapping and whatnot, but he doesn't know, I don't know what, he doesn't know how to do, use computers to a high enough degree, I guess. Yeah. And he wants to make them cool. He said, and he's, yeah, fair play to the guy. He's got $500,000 quid and said, take this money, make children better at IT.
Yeah.
And then the, I forget exactly who it was, someone from somewhere.
Valerie Thompson from the eLearning Foundation.
There you go. She said, wow, this is all great, but with that money we can only buy 2,000 iPads.
I had a look at the eLearning Foundation and they seem to do a lot of stuff on iPads. So maybe it's the BBC not asking the right person rather than the news that it's going to be used to.
Is this Valerie Thompson...
At
Apple.com.
Well, her company or her charity does seem to, the iPad tablet thing seems to be their method for teaching. So it isn't clear at all that that's what the money will be spent on.
iPads.
It
looked a bit like dodgy reporting from the BBC.
Yeah, again.
But
it did prompt a very interesting question, I think, of, What should we expect children to leave school knowing about computers?
And also, to be fair, if David Lammy had had an iPad in 1978 when John Paul II was made Pope, he might have remembered the bit about the black and the white smoke. So based on this, this quite bizarre story, we asked about what you think kids should be able to do with computers when they leave school. So, first of all, we have to go on to Dizzy Lizzy's suggestion. Public education needs public software. Nice. She says, I may not have much to contribute here, but I do have to make a post for a chance to have it read in a sexy British accent.
I see.
You're failing on that.
That's why you've taken the pipe out of your mouth.
That seems even more sinister than naked images still stuck in my head.
Cricket jumper draped around manly shoulders. Nice bit of rough shag in the old meerschaum. Clamped between strong white teeth.
Yes.
So what does she say? Here we go. The way the post went, it turned out to be more in line with what should we be teaching our students about computers, but, at least in the US, Spain already understands this. I think a more pressing issue is the use of non-free software in public education systems. The LibrePlanet wiki has a good essay called Why Public Education Must Use Free Software. And while I won't link to it here because of spam issues, I hope some of you take a look. It's very US-centric, but I think it gets the point across convincingly. Ciao.
How you doing?
Andrew Gregory can be reached on
box number
0891 50 50 50. So with that out of the way, thanks Lizzie. Toey says, editor needed, apostrophe used to signify 1,000. Here at LXF Towers, we think the debate. What?
Errors.
In the question that Ben wrote, he criticised somebody's grammar skills, I think, and introduced errors of his own. This is an example of Murphy's Law.
Which is, if you're gonna criticize someone's spelling, you will spell something wrong.
Yeah. Is that is that a multiple of Muffreys, or is it like a singular?
I think there is just one Muffrey, and he owns it.
Is that an apostrophe?
Genitive singular,
right? Okay.
Apostrophe S.
I left the apostrophe in as a thousand separator because I think it looks good.
that's how grammar works. That's what rules are for. So we could get actually no. On to the more serious points now. Phelan Whiteley says, back in the dim and distant days when I left school, 1997, we went to uni, we never had decent access to information, we generally took what teachers said at face value. If we want kids to get us anywhere, we need them to question everything and not to be afraid to completely destroy things in the process of learning. That's why the goal of the Raspberry Pi is at its heart so excellent. Give them the tools they can afford to break so they can learn. These days, the info is everywhere, but not all of it is relevant or correct. Teaching them to be critical, give them the skills to self-investigate while teaching them it can actually be fun, is the best way, in my very humble opinion. I think he's absolutely bang on there.
Yeah.
I've written in caps, this is the best point ever made by man.
Wow.
So true. Books, you used to read a book and find a fact, and there's the fact. Nowadays, you go online. And
Google, what's the fact?
What is true? What is truth nowadays? No one knows.
Well, I found out the other day that coyotes can run faster than roadrunners.
What?
Yeah.
No!
That entire cartoon was based on a lie.
A lie.
You sit on a throne of lies. Xiao says, what does education need? A good hard kick up the arse. I used to teach ICT in schools. I was fed up teaching MS Office and calling it a GCSE. Oh. We need a curriculum that isn't grounded in the 1990s and revision guides without Windows 2000 in them. Harsh.
But probably fair.
Yes. Phelan Whiteley, again, Phelan. Just in case it wasn't obvious, they should learn to code. They should never be taught how to use MS Office products. They really are not that important. If you can program, you'll manage. Not sure I agree with that. I've not headed that, the best point ever made by a man. Do you think teachers should actively avoid Microsoft Office?
Yeah, I do. I think it's okay to like have a module on Visual Basic and whatever people are using in Excel, but I think the default should be to use open standards and open software.
You see, I think it's more important just to show the range that's out there. So it should be a point that you have to teach LibreOffice, you have to teach OpenOffice, throw in GNOME Office, throw in everything, so they can see the differences.
Yeah.
And they can understand.
But if differences is a module, yeah. But I mean, as a default, you can do almost all the same things you need to know in all the main Office packages.
Exactly. And throw this home. Do one essay in Word. Make them do the next essay in LibreOffice. Yeah, yeah. So they understand that difference between an Office package in general and this particular Office package. They understand the quirks. And they also get to know what they like. They can say, this one works for me, this one doesn't. They can evaluate the software for themselves. Yeah, you're right.
At what level of education are we talking about? Are we talking late primary school?
Leaving school at 16 or 17.
Right. I see the problem that I always see, because I didn't study that level of education here, is that, and I find that when I was doing my degree here, that students didn't even know what they wanted to do with their lives. They didn't. What I mean is that you go to do a degree thinking that you have some level of interest in that subject. Am I right, or am I totally
maybe
wrong?
It was the easiest thing for me to do.
Yeah. Right. But there you go. So how can you make a decision of what they should be learning secondary school level, for instance? Regarding IT, when they probably don't even know what they want to learn.
This is about a foundation of knowledge, like maths and English.
That's exactly what I mean. You need to have a level of information on what you want to do after that school period.
Well, that's a different. I think that's a different argument.
Up to 16, you're talking about.
No, I think.
No, this question is specifically about what CS knowledge people need would be best. You know, the most useful to people. Nothing about what they do with it afterwards.
This is the thing that everyone should know. Basically, anything you're teaching up to GCSE level is stuff that people should know across the board. Whether you become a doctor, a mechanic, secretary, anything, they should have this basic level of knowledge.
Yeah,
and then they can specialise beyond that.
Yeah. And going back to the question, my the only point that I wanted to make about what I feel is that I think a student should leave school without any mystery surrounding what computers are. So I think your point about trying different office environments is exactly right, because it's you're sold the myth that MS Office is the only one that you can practically use, and people are often surprised when they find something that does very similar. And I think it should be the same about the CPU and about the hardware and about computers and about networks and about how they actually work, so that people don't go on later in life and thinking of ICT or IT as this weird black art that is operated by geeks in server rooms. I think they should actually have some, it's empowering to know that really it's not that difficult, and it's no different to understanding correct grammar or certain parts of geography. You know, it's empowering to know that really there's no magic behind it, and that's the only thing that I'd want from people.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that students should know how to do things like install an operating system so that they can take control of their own computer. If that wants to be the next version of Windows, fine. If it wants to be the next version of Linux, even better. But at least they understand how to control the hardware. They need to know that it's a tool for them. It's not something to allow someone else to dictate how you work.
Yeah.
And they should have the ability to make it do what they want, whatever that is.
Rezen says, I would like to add that pushing students to learn MS Office in particular is pointless. I found that businesses and my school suffer from various amounts of lag. My school didn't have the 2010 edition and Windows 7 in one of our labs until last year. The rest of the school remained behind. My employer, a casino, uses XP. And an older version. Which casino? This sounds ripe for a practical demonstration of Ben's cover feature about hacking the web, which is going to be on sale. Oh, I don't know. We should find this stuff out before
Thursday soon.
It's going to be
in all 2 weeks
in all good news agents. Yeah.
I used to work in for an educational as a social enterprise, and we were pushing Linux thin clients out. And obviously we come against competition mostly running Windows. And one of the things we have time and time again is you've got to teach them Windows because that's what they'll use. I'm like, yeah, but these kids are going to be in industry in 5-10 years' time. The version of Windows they're going to be using then is going to be completely different from what we're using now. The version of Office is going to be completely different. There's no reason to suspect it'll be any similar to the current version of Windows, and it will be to the current version of Linux. I mean, I learned on a RISC PC, and I don't just bang my head against the screen when I get to a Windows one. You know, it's the basic understanding. And they're like, oh no, Windows will always be the same. It's always be the same. Well, that was when Windows 7 was out.
Yeah.
You know?
I've headed this next post, anger. It comes from Spanguages. I cling to an old-fashioned view that comprehensive education should not be preparation for jobs, or training, I believe one could call it, but should be, how can I put this? What's a good word? Oh yes, education. Firstly, I believe in the old liberal notion that if we educate our populace as best we can, then a lot of the rest takes care of itself. Society will naturally advance. And I mean properly educate in rigorous fields that demand reasoning, imagination, critical thinking, and so on. Maths, science, art, philosophy, aesthetics, semiotics, logic, philosophy of science, critical theory, etc. I think if these things were taught in school, the world would be a far better place. I agree wholeheartedly. They can specialise later in vocational college and or university, give them a breadth and depth of knowledge and understanding of how systems of knowledge work and interact with each other. Give them the best chance of being really good at whatever field they choose. Secondly, training kids for the jobs of today is futile, since the jobs of today will not be the jobs of tomorrow. Blah, blah. He goes on, and it's all solid gold.
He's a child of the Thatcher era, isn't he?
He's fired with righteous anger, and every single word is true. Schools should be places which fuel kids' natural desire to learn and create, not places which extinguish it by training. I apologise for my language. I feel strongly about this.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's like the Guardian comments page.
But, it's closer to what we asked. He says we shouldn't teach MS Office or how to install Gentoo or whatever in schools. They should learn these things later in doing other stuff. They should learn the backdrop. They should learn like you say about computers not being mystical sealed boxes.
I mean, it's what I've heard it said quite a few times from people in business, that what they look for is what they call T people. And the idea is you have a general broad area and one specialism. And I think that's a sort of business speak for roughly the same thing. You have a good wide area that you've got a little bit of knowledge on, and one area that you've got a lot of knowledge on. So if you were to graph it, it would look like a T.
Awesome. yes. To be honest, when I go through the posts on open ballot, I try to categorise them somehow into a yes, no, maybe. But this, I mean, the debate is on here is impossible to summarise, really. Everything is just really well thought out. And even
excellent. They have fantastic comments. Yeah. Really well thought out comments.
I mean, just a few more. Toby says, a proper education in reading, writing and arithmetic is what is needed. And understanding that computers are not clever, they are just tools to be used. Yeah. I'm well over 60 now and have little experience of current education, but seeing young people writing online who don't know the difference between there, and there does not fill me with optimism.
I had to go and reread the question to make sure that wasn't a dig at me then. I didn't make that mistake, I don't think.
Awesome. Yeah. James Nass, I think it's wrong to fixate on specific hardware or software products. Ultimately, you will need something to teach on, but the curriculum should put emphasis on understanding how to do things in general. Sultan of Swing, you know, he's got a really good username. Everything's really good. I think everyone has the same sort of sense of anger of Spanguages.
Frustration.
And failing Whiteley. I mean, we had 1 hour a week of IT teaching.
How much of RE?
For the same. An RE is far more interesting and I've found far more useful.
Yeah.
Despite its Judeo-Christian bias.
But is it a compulsory subject within the...
I've got no idea. Back in the day, it was a bit compulsory.
I don't think we had any until A-level.
Any IT?
Computing, yeah.
Really?
Certainly not at GCSE.
But you shouldn't need... If you want to be a computer programmer, surely the best skill to have is maths and logic and the ability to break problems down. And that's the same sort of skill that you learn in learning how to write a good essay.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, but there's also... There's a technical side of things. This is... what a computer is, how it's structured, what a network is, how that's structured, you know, is that side of things.
So I've forgotten who said it, but one of the commenters said, you know, the argument that we should teach people IT skills because it makes up such a big part of our economy is... you know, if you told that to be true, then you might as well teach kids investment banking, because that's, you know, what 10% of our GDP or 15% or something ridiculous.
Actually,
like that.
I wouldn't have minded a little bit of something.
No, I wouldn't.
We were talking about that. We had to pick shares and we had
just
a competition
did an awesome
at the end
course.
Of the year.
Oh, wow.
What was Eton like, Ben? Tell us. Tablets. Oh, someone's got a tablet rant.
Oh.
This is based on, and the, you know, we could spend £500,000 on 2,000 iPads. Flatlander Penguin says, it's quaint to see how the UK deals with these issues, as I hail from the very centre of the nation. What's that? Probably quite near the Amber Ales Brewery then. Yeah. Of course, we wouldn't waste money so foolishly on something like iPads, right? Shit! iPads everywhere. Both my parents are teachers and of small children. My father incessantly fawns over his iPad and brags of how tech-savvy his students are from getting to use them in class. From what I've seen, the integration of the iPad seems to be fairly good as a teaching aid, but as something that one would delegate to the area of novelty. No matter how many features they pack into an iPad, it will always be a toy. Toys have their place, but it must be said that tablets have benefits to the entirety of the school experience. However, this is very different than teaching technological literacy.
Yes, it is. It is. That's the important thing. The iPad is like a modern slate.
Yes.
I mean, it's actually something that Rob Bishop mentioned at the Raspberry Pi Jamboree. What the Apple talk about with the iPad is to make the computing invisible.
Mm.
It's about the user and it's about the content. Yeah. The computer, you shouldn't know it's there. The Raspberry Pi is the opposite
of
that.
Yeah.
It's about the computer and not really about the content.
Yeah.
So you could say that there is an argument for iPads in other lessons.
In facilitating.
Yeah, in, I don't know, English or whatever. I don't know, maths, maybe you can writing numbers. I don't know.
Catching up on CBeebies with iPlayer.
Yeah.
Art.
Well, actually, I was going to bring that up as well, because Raspberry Pi has actually been incredibly popular with artists, because its ability to be embedded in art installations.
Right. And, they're not proper artists, though, are they?
Are they not? Really? They don't paint.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they might paint over stuff.
Yeah.
You could make your Raspberry Pi pink so it looks like a raspberry.
That's art.
Put two leaves on it. That's art.
What do you mean they're not proper artists?
They're not proper artists.
They're not going now collecting insects and creating their own red paint for the...
Goya was a proper artist. Yeah. Titian was a proper artist. Not Tracy Emin.
Wow.
Fact.
That's a fact.
That's it. Open ballot over.
Right. Well, this has actually turned into one of the most argumentative podcasts since Paul was here. It's also one of the longest. So, it's been good fun, actually. I've enjoyed it. So, hopefully see you again in a couple of weeks' time, where we'll try our hardest to make it live. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, we haven't mentioned it, but if you can buy Linux format, it really helps. It's a fantastic magazine.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
It's such a nice day to be on the main stage. All class skipping violence and ordinarily it's scary, baby. I don't feel so very good, like you said.